just in the nick of time. What does that make us?
Big damn heroes, sir.
Ain't we just?
Let's talk about your reviews a little bit regarding intravenous DeMilo. This tasteless cover is a good indication of the lack of musical invention within. The musical growth rate of this band cannot even be charted. They are treading water in a sea of retarded sexuality and bad poetry.
Well, that's nitpicking, isn't it?
You know what this is? It's the world's smallest violin playing just for the waitresses.
Hello and welcome to Shoot the Breeze on Resonance 104.4 FM, a film and TV radio show where a handful of film enthusiasts shoot the breeze about all things film and television. I am Marcus E. Acko, and the movie at which I first cried was Animal Farm.
And I am Laura Sampson, and the movie at which I first cried was The Neverending Story.
And with us in the studio today, the director of High Low Joe. Please tell us your name and the movie at which you first cried.
My name is James Kermack, and the film that made me cry is Scrooged with Bill Murray.
Also with us in the studio, please tell us your name and the movie that first made you cry.
My name is Nick Sadler, and the first film that made me cry was Watership Down.
Okay, so Watership Down, okay, Watership Down is...
That's the first film that completely ruined me.
Yeah.
I mean, crying just doesn't even come close to touching what that film did to me.
Yeah,
oh my goodness.
It's flashbacks.
It taught me fear.
So why'd you have to go with that one? I mean, yeah, no...
It was my first memory of crying to a film. I was 6 years old and I was watching it by myself, and I remember my father was in the shower. And I got up when, you know, that scene at the end when it all goes red and they're all getting slaughtered.
Yep.
And I don't know what to do, and I just ran into the shower, and I was like, oh, damn. I didn't even know what to
say. Yeah, Laura, stop it. I know you're about to start crying. It's
and I'm not crying, but my heart is already starting to beat a bit faster at that memory. It took me another decade to watch it again after that first time.
Yeah, see, it didn't affect me.
And I was afraid of rabbits.
It didn't affect me that much. I mean, it's just dusty in here, so it's not, James, you talked about Scrooged.
Yeah, man.
Yeah, so Bill Murray.
Bill Murray's a legend.
It's almost Christmas as well. You're going to be watching it this Christmas?
Yeah, well, I watch it every Christmas. I watch it once a day, December 1st to 25th, every day.
Okay.
It's a superb film. When the little lad comes up at the end and he's like, you know, hasn't spoken for the whole film or his whole life.
Yeah, see, for me, the speech alone, I mean, his speech at the end, that just basically, it gets me going. And when the boy comes up, it's sort of like, nope, that's it. I need to stop the movie at this point because obviously it's all lost for me. So
yeah, it's done.
I mentioned Animal Farm because that's the first one I remember. And it's the one scene in particular where it's based on the George Orwell book, the Animal Farm. And there's after the pigs have taken over, and there's the donkey and the horse, and they are working at the windmill, and a bale of hay falls down and, you know, injures the horse, and then the horse gets carted away to the veterinary hospital, as air quotes, and then the doors slam shut and you see glue factory, and the donkey's trying to stop the horse. He realizes what's going on and is trying to rescue the horse, and that bit just shatters me every single time. So, anyway, nice way to bring it to pump this show
up. Crying is good for you. It's almost as good for you as swearing, apparently.
It's good for you, but I do feel bad for anyone who hasn't seen these three films because we've just given away the end.
Sorry,
thinking
guys.
About watching those.
You've had at least 20 years to have seen them. So.
Well, I was having this conversation with someone about spoiler alerts. What do we do with spoiler alerts, right? Now, okay, these are all movies that at least are... They're people who are having kids right now who were born after these movies were made. So, I mean, do we still have to announce spoiler alerts before we talk about them? We probably
think
there's
like a 1 year cap. If you haven't seen it in a year, you know, you're in trouble. If you don't know Bruce Willis is dead at the end, then
Don't spoil. I was going to say Hudson Hawk, but it's fine.
Everyone died in Hudson Hawk, well, the audience included.
I liked Hudson Hawk.
I really enjoy it, but it's not a good film.
Okay, fair enough. Okay, you're listening to Shoot the Breeze on Resonance 104.4 FM. I'm Marcus E. Acko.
And I'm Laura Sampson.
With us in the studio is James Carmack, the director of High Low Joe. It's coming out on the 24th of November. We're going to be talking to him about the movie. He's going to tell us all about it. We're going to ask him loads of questions. We had a number of people who have sent us Twitter messages and Facebook messages to ask questions, so I've written down on my notepad. We'll do that. Also coming up on the show, we're going to be doing UK Box Office Top 5. We'll be doing our Top 5 film and TV discussion, and we'll also have Netflix and Amazon recommendations. James, did you get your recommendation?
I have. I've got one for Amazon, one for Netflix.
Oh, I'm both. Prepped. Wow, you did. You did prep. I only have Netflix. I need to step up my game. But before that, we've got film and TV news.
The film and TV news stories section of the show starts with something I'm really excited about today. It's happening next week, and it is the Underwire Film Festival. It's a feminist film festival made up of over 100 short films and some features, and it's happening in cinemas all over London next week. All the films are celebrating female achievement in filmmaking across lots of different disciplines of the craft of filmmaking. I've been looking forward to it for over a month, and I can't wait to go and see as much of it as I can. I'm so excited about it, in fact, that I managed to talk to the festival director, Anna Bogutskaya, who kindly agreed to tell me a little bit more about it over coffee at the BFI South Bank. So this is Anna introducing the festival.
Underwire Festival is the UK's, at the moment, only and largest film festival celebrating female talent across the crafts, and this is what makes it unique. It was set up in 2010 by a screenwriter, Gabrielle, and a producer, Gemma, who essentially banded together and thought that there was nothing existing at that time that spotlighted and celebrated the variety of roles that go into creating a film. So there are a lot of film festivals, most of them actually celebrate the on-screen talent, so the actors, they celebrate the directors, but there's really nothing working or kind of working with the craftspeople behind films, and particularly the short film space as well. So that was kind of the ethos from the beginning, and that has continued throughout the editions of the festival and has only grown. So Underwire currently recognizes 12 categories, 10 of those are craft-based. So, you know, everything from directors to cinematographers through sound designers, production designers, animators, editors, and this is all in the short film space, and it's specifically focusing on female talent, meaning that, you know, a short film can be directed by a man, can be about men, or, you know, anything or anyone. But what we recognize, what we try to elevate and support, is the women making those films happen, not just on a directorial level, not just on screen, but, you know, everything, you know, the female editors, the female sound designers, all of these categories, all of these areas are deeply underrepresented by women, so there's not enough women working in them in the industry. And what we try to do is essentially provide a platform for them to shine, to spotlight their work. We also give prizes for every one of the categories, so every prize is not cash. It's got a development and mentoring aspect to it, so the whole goal is to help them progress their careers in some way, either get them in a room with relevant people that might be able to help them or open them doors, or get them, you know, free kit for their next project that can enable them to, you know, put something into more work and continue making things and getting kind of that exposure as well, so they can build their portfolio and build their career and kind of jump into doing features or doing commercial work as well, because all of that is kind of a rolling ball as well of, you know, if you go into one project and you kind of start getting more projects and getting more work, that's kind of what we're trying to achieve.
Well, that was Anna Bogutskaya, the festival director of the Underwire Film Festival. I think it's great that there's a real helpful focus for emerging filmmakers in the industry, as well as people going to see films. I mean, obviously, a film festival is for people watching the films, but it's also for people who are trying to meet other people and trying to make more films. This weekend, there's a, as part of the festival, there is a conference and networking opportunity specifically aimed at emerging female filmmakers called the Wired Women Weekender. And I think that looks, I mean, the lineup looks pretty exciting. What the kind of things they'll be talking about, the kind of people who are.
And that's very good. It kind of harks back to the last week's show where we had Iki Elam Ritzi come in from Identity Agency Group, where she was talking more about supporting BAME artists, black, Asian, ethnic minority artists in film, in television. And we discussed and said one of the main reasons why there are fewer people of BAME origin on TV is because of the lack of producers, the skill sets, the lack of producers, cameramen, directors in the industry. So you don't have writers of ethnic minority persuasion there to write stories that would talk to people of ethnic minorities. Same thing for women. You have fewer women in those areas of the industry, and so the Underwire Film Festival, Underwire Festival, is great, and it's one of the opportunities to promote skill set, to build skill sets in women who are interested in getting into the industry.
Well, yeah, and it's great that it's so easy to actually submit a film to it. When I spoke to Anna, she was really eloquent about the process of submission, and it only costs about $10 to submit a film. Every film that they receive is watched a couple of times, and they choose as many as they can that are brilliant.
So if anyone wants to get more information about Underwire Festival, what do they need to do?
The first thing to do would be go and see something there. Maybe go to the Wired Women Weekender. There are still tickets available, I think, for this weekend. But the festival itself runs from the 22nd to the 26th. That's next Wednesday to next Sunday. And for more information about that and to book tickets, the Underwire Festival website is underwirefestival.com. And they're really easy to find on social media at Underwire Fest. So at Underwire Fest. There are lots of things I want to go to, and I am looking forward to having a chat about them next week.
I know you had a list of films that you said you were going to look at in the festival. So we're going to put that on the Facebook page, which is for this show, which is Shoot the Breeze on Resonance 104.4 FM on Facebook. And our Twitter page is at STB_ResonanceFM. One of our guests in the studio, James Kermack, his Twitter handle is at Kermack82, correct?
It is indeed.
Yes. Excellent. And James is here to promote his new film, High Low Joe. James, can you tell us about the movie?
Yeah, it's a romantic drama with a psychological edge. It's about a guy called Joe, who's the life and soul of the party. He goes out drinking, gets on very well with everyone, but he's actually suffering from very bad depression, mental health issues, and he has been for a very long time. And then he meets this girl, Ellie, at one of his parties, and they fall in love, and she moves in. And then he has to basically deal with the fact that he finally has someone in very close proximity to him, so he has to deal with the mental health issues. They start to come out a bit more, and then she helps him to deal with them. So it's about how they get through that.
Yeah, you describe the movie as a cross between Black Swan and 500 Days of Summer.
Yes.
So you've got this psychological horror, if you will, Black Swan, and then you've got 50 Days of Summer, which is the romantic...
500 Days of Summer. Definitely 50, not 50 Shades,
50 Shades
of Grey.
No.
It's not Black Swan meets 50 Shades of Grey, so I definitely didn't direct that.
50 Shades of Summer?
Now I've got that in my head. I can't get that out. Sorry, 500...
They're going to be very disappointed if that's what they're coming to see.
Yeah, there's bondage in it. No, I'm kidding. So you've got the, as you said, romantic comedy mixed with psychological drama. Mm-hmm. With us in the studio, we've got Nick Sadler from who's the CMO of Film Label, who has basically picked up this particular film and is distributing it. Is that correct, Nick?
Yeah, that's very correct.
What grabbed you about the film?
To be honest, the director, James Kermack, we met at Cannes Film Festival.
You don't have to say that because he's in the room. We can just send him out and then you can talk. He's like, nah, no, not at all.
No one's listening. Of course no one's listening.
No, but the thing is, it all starts with a good film, and behind the film is a great writer and director. And, you know, there are a few people out there that have got that kind of spark, and you can see it when you meet people. You know, you can tell in about 10 seconds, hey, there's something here. And, you know, I quickly saw that when, you know, when I first met James. And so I was like, you know, I sent the film over and then I watched it with my wife and we were like, this is a great film. And it's not normally a film I'd typically go and see. And I was really moved by it. And yeah, and then, you know, we'd continue our conversations and signed it and said, let's do something with this in the UK. And here we are.
I've been following the progress for this movie for years now. So when it went to Cannes...
Yeah, because I've been on it for like a decade. Well, close.
Which is the next question I'm going to come to you in a second. But just before I get to that, we read how it basically went and slayed at Cannes Film Festival. So congratulations on that.
Thank you.
Based on that, you moved off and you got other projects, which is no secret. It's pretty much splashed all over media. Basically, you're effectively the next whoever you want to. I always say the next Donald Glover. So you said
Glover rather than Trump. Well,
you could be the next Donald Trump.
Nobody wants to be the next Donald Trump.
So High Low Joe seems to be getting a lot of positive buzz. And as I was saying, I've been following it for quite a while. How long did it take you to get to this point?
I started it about 5 years ago. So I originally had another script called Knuckle Dust, which I was putting around, which is getting a bit of traction, but it was much bigger budget, so to do it as my first feature was proven very difficult. So I decided to do a smaller film in budget, but that was still very high in ambition, and so came up with High Low Joe, which is a much more personal film. So I did that, worked on that for about 2 years on the script.
Okay.
And then we shot it maybe 2.5 years ago. And we're in post for some time because we did a lot of post deals and people were very kind of us, but it took a bit of time. And then we did some festivals. And now we find ourselves here. So it's been about 5 years from beginning to, well, this hopefully isn't the end, but, you know, to where we are now.
No, of course, because now it premieres on November 24th. Mm-hmm. View Cinema in Piccadilly.
Yeah,
sold out, right?
Sold out.
Wow.
48 hours.
Yeah, I was lucky to manage to get a ticket for it. So it was like, unfortunately, Laura didn't get a ticket. So I'll tell you what the movie's like.
We're going to have a sword fight for that ticket.
Yeah. you come find me first. So and you started moving around the country to start setting out in different other locations as well. I think Liverpool got sold out.
Hull is sold out, I think, and we're. What was the other one? I think we're...
Five or six from... I think it is Liverpool, isn't it?
Yeah, I think Liverpool might have one as well. But we got, I think, 7-8 screenings now across the UK. So it's kind of a London, Brighton, Hull. We just added one in Cardiff, actually.
Okay.
Liverpool, Leeds, Oxford. It's all over the place.
Yeah. So okay. is this a tour of screenings with director or kind of crew... creative team Q&A afterwards.
Yeah, so some of them will have it will be me, some of them will be me and the lead actor, some will be just the lead actor, somebody is cinematographer, Mark Nutkins. So it's nice and varied. The team are very much chipping in and hoping to be at various different dates.
Excellent. You're listening to Shoot the Breeze on Resonance 104.4 FM. I'm Marcus E. Acko.
And I'm Laura Sampson.
With us in the studio is the director of High Low Joe, James Kermack, and the CMO of film label, Nick Sadler. Hi, guys. So the one last question I want to ask before we move on, this came from one of the Facebook page. I know you do seminars. You've been doing seminars the last few months, mm-hmm. basically talking about how you made High Low Joe and helping filmmakers sort of network and you know, try and get to that point from point A to the point where they actually get in the movie where you are.
Yep.
And one of the questions that came in was, how do you raise money to do that? Now, I know this story. Would you like to share how you raised the money for this project?
How did I raise money? Okay, so the money for this, I mean, it came from all different places. You know, we did a bit of crowdfunding to pull in a little bit of money. We had a little bit of private investment. A lot of people did work in kind, came on board and helped out. And a great deal of people did post-production deals with us. But primarily, I mean, the way to get stuff done, I think, especially to make an indie feature or a short, is what I did was to make a list across the board of, you know, actors. You put actors at the top, you put cinematographer at the top, you put first AD at the top. And then you just make the list and you go through who you know who does these jobs and you try and fill it that way. And the same with equipment. You know, you go, if you put on Facebook tomorrow, anyone, and went, hey, does anyone know own a camera we could shoot on? You possibly have maybe two or three people who come forward, in which case that takes away your camera cost.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't have that. We had a really great company called One Stop Rental, who were absolutely fantastic, and they sorted us out with the Arri Alexa to shoot on, which is amazing. It's like, well, they shoot Hunger Games and the Bond films on.
Okay.
So they were amazing. But you know, that's the best way to try and do it first, is to try and see what you already have and then to try and raise the money to pay for what you have to.
Okay, Nick, I'm just going to throw this question to you. Is there anything from a distribution point of view that you can offer as sort of help in funding the movie before it gets made?
Pretty much just everything James has said, especially on these level of budget films. If anything, I would say make sure you leave some money for marketing, because it's often the very last thing, and it's very hard to get the ball rolling, and you're relying on just your team to do it, and it's very hard. That's all I would say. Definitely leave some money towards it. I mean, if you think about it, big budget Hollywood films, or even, you know, $1 million budgets, they'll spend almost the same amount of money, if not more, on the marketing as what they made the film for. But yeah, you won't get a $150,000 indie film spending $150,000 marketing. But if they did, it would probably make its money back and be quite a big success. So that's all I'd say on that.
How valuable was the festival success exposure to your marketing efforts?
It was great. I mean, we the first one we went to was the BFI Expo in 2016 with Helen McKenzie and her team, who got us in there. And so I think it was only four or five films who got picked up by first time directors, one of which was myself, and one of which was another great film called Moondogs, which came out earlier in the year by Philip John. And so that was fantastic. We had one screening there, and that's for just industry people. And luckily, we had a sales agent come in, and they really liked it, an LA-based sales agent, so they took it. And also we had people from the Dinard Film Festival, which is an amazing festival in France. It was in its 27th year when we went. And that was amazing for us because it's very well respected. I mean, the year we were there, you know, it was with Kate Dickey and Phil Davis and Jason Fleming and all these wonderful people. And to be a part of that was fantastic. You know, it was a great deal of validation, because I was treated as a director, especially, exactly the same as everyone else. You know, I was there with the same time as Ken Loach, which was insane. And you're being treated with respect. And, you know, so for that, it was fantastic. It's validation for me.
Were you selected to chair one of the panels at some point?
Yeah. So basically, they also had, it was the first ever year of the Shortcuts jury, which is the short films jury. And so there were four of us. And that was fantastic as well. There was a, you know, first time to do that, and some great films there. The one we actually chose to win was the one that also won the BAFTA, which is Operator by Caroline Bartley, which is an amazing film starring Kate Dickey. If you know Kate, she was in Red Road, The Witch, Filth. Wonderful, wonderful woman. And yeah, so the festival really, really helped for exposure to get us out there a little bit. And we're actually still on the festival route. Like, we've still got more festivals coming up, and so that should be another year, to be honest.
Wow, okay. And indeed, that's while it's in the cinema, it's still going around in festivals?
Yeah, it's still going. I think we're in a festival literally the second week of the cinema run, so we're in the Eindhoven Film Festival in Holland. So. Okay.
Oh, that's excellent. That's excellent. And then, as you said, Knuckle Dust, which was the one that you originally wanted to work on first, but obviously you didn't have the budget for it. Mm-hmm. Now you're getting, are you getting traction on Knuckle Dust?
We are getting traction on Knuckle Dust. So basically, a fantastic company called Futuristic Films, run by a wonderful guy called Julien Lafleur. Basically, they saw Hi-Lo Joe in the very early stages when it was being edited together at a company called Zebra, where he was working as a producer. He then said, look, do you have sound yet? We have no sound. You know, we have no soundtrack or anything. It was going to be me playing, you know, scissors, you know, Noel Gallagher style. But he managed to get a great company called AOC to come on do the soundtrack. So we had a fantastic composer called Benjamin Sheldon. So that's an original soundtrack. And then they said, have you got any other scripts? And I obviously had Knuckle Dust. I gave them that. They bought that in like 24 hours.
Nice.
With the agreement that I direct it.
Okay.
So now we're 80% cast. Funding's nearly there. We're in the final throes of, you know, getting there to go into pre-production.
Okay.
So yes, that will be my second film.
So that's your second film. Okay.
Yeah.
So I know you started off as an actor. Are you still carrying on the acting side, or have you basically parked that because the film director career has kicked off?
I parked it in a sense. I mean, you know, I just wouldn't have time to go away and do you know, a play or something like that anymore. But equally, you know, I think, oddly, I think I've got like 5 films out next year because, you know, mates have asked me to do stuff, to come in and do stuff. And you're like, the moment you say you can't do anything, people are like, hey, do you want to come and do this? And
it's
like,
yeah, oh, I'm just okay, going to pull my treatment back now.
Yeah.
So
there's a couple of films out next year. As a, you know, Dead in a Week or Your Money Back, which is produced by my friend Dan Cooper, with Chris Eccleston and Tom Wilkinson, a film called The Tombs by a director called Dan Brownlee. We just did a film, so Futuristic Films, where I'm now head of creative development. They hired me after a year of working with them.
Oh, nice. Okay.
We just did a film out in Latvia called The Sonata, which was with Rutger Hauer, Freya Tingley, Simon Abkarian, really great cast. And we finished that on Saturday.
Okay.
So we just come back and I've got a little part in that as well.
Oh, fair enough. That was going to be my next question. Are you thinking of directing any movies that you're going to be starring in? So doing the Robert Redford, George Clooney thing where you're director, actor, producer, writer, etc.
Well, I'm in Knuckle Dust, so yeah.
Main character?
No, I'm a supporting character. Okay. I'm in Hilo, you know, supporting character. So I think I'm, you know, I'd like to do that in the future, but I'd like to build up to it and, you know.
Sure.
Work into it.
Okay, excellent. This is Shoot the Breeze on Resonance 104.4 FM. I'm Marcus E. Acko.
And I'm Laura Sampson.
With us in the studio, the director of Hilo Joe, James Kermack, and the CMO of film label, Nick Sadler, here to talk about Hilo Joe. So we'll park on the barrage of questions that we've been asking you so far. We're going to move to a new segment that we started. Well, it's not new anymore. We've been doing it for about 4 weeks, which is the musical interlude. And we're going to be playing El Mariachi from El Mariachi.
Great track.
Yeah, I was trying to keep it in theme, which is basically like first. El Mariachi by Robert Rodriguez from the movie El Mariachi. Although it's on the soundtrack for Once Upon a Time in Mexico, still an El Mariachi movie. You're listening to Shoot the Breeze on Resonance 104.4 FM. I am Marcus E. Acko.
And I'm Laura Sampson.
And with us, like I mentioned earlier, the director of Hilo Joe, James Kermack, and Nick Sadler, the CMO of Film Label, here promoting Hilo Joe. So the next segment is UK Box Office Top 5. So, James, I'm assuming that because you've been so busy, you've not watched any of the movies in the top five.
I haven't watched any of the movies in the top five yet.
Okay,
I've
run away,
but yeah.
Well, number five is Jigsaw. So you know about the Saw franchise, right?
Yeah, I know the Saw franchise. I love the first Saw film.
Yep.
I really enjoy the first Saw film. I think it's a great theatrical piece and a great setup. I'm not a massive fan. Like, I love horror films, but pure gore,
yep.
I'm a bit out.
No, I'm with you. I said this last week when this first popped into top five. I love the first one. Second one, I thought, okay, was fine. Third one, I started seeing where it was going down, and then I gave up after that, and then found out that they made like 5 other movies after that. Mm. So, and now they just retitled it Jigsaw, where they're starting from the beginning. But that's number five, I guess. It's just coming out after Halloween.
I'm a bit of a sucker for these type of films, but it's not one that I can say was a great film.
you didn't enjoy it? No.
Well, I'm not sure whether I'd like to admit that I
you can enjoy it. I won't mock you, I promise. I always say I'm not going to mock you, and I never do.
Never.
Never. Never. Yeah. No. Fair enough. That's number five. Number four, A Bad Mum's Christmas. So this is, we have Mila Kunis back, Kristen Bell, Catherine
Hahn.
Catherine Hahn, thank you. And they're now joined by Susan Sarandon, Christine Baranski, and Cheryl Hines. So they're stacking up the cast. I can't muster up the energy. I thought the first one was okay. It was possible. Mila Kunis, I like Mila Kunis. She's great. And Kristen Bell, love her and everything she does. But it was, you know, I'm surprised there was a sequel, which is Bad Mom's Christmas. But obviously they're trying to cash in on the Christmas season. So that's why the sequel's come out. Am I going to go watch it? Nope. I'm not going to watch it. My wife is, and she's going to tell me how great it was. I know she's planning on seeing that this weekend. I, on the other hand, probably going to see the next one on the list, which is number three, Thor Ragnarok. I've seen that already. Amazing. It is.
You're going to see it again. So I'm not going to see this with my wife, but I will go see Thor again.
I will. Yes, I will go and see Thor again, because I said this last week. So far, my rankings in the Marvel movies, for me, number one, Guardians of the Galaxy, Volume 1 is my favorite. At the moment, Avengers Assemble is number two, but the only reason why it's number two is because I haven't seen Thor Ragnarok again, because that's number three. I'm going to see it again, get all the jokes again, and laugh at it. Taika Waititi, he knocked it out of the park.
Yeah, he's an epic director. Yeah. He's fantastic.
And it's great. It's got all the nice little in-jokes in there. So, yeah, definitely go see it.
It is, and it's... I'm always surprised when these films are actually kind of accurate to the mythology, but it does some really interesting things, sort of kind of in-jokes with the material that it comes from as well.
Yeah.
And since it came out in the US... It's made an insane amount of money. It's nearly 30 million in the UK.
That's because it's that good. That's why I'm telling you. You should go see it. You know what? I'm going to go see it straight after this.
I saw it 3 days before its official release date. And I mentioned at the time, I think, that it's a real cheat that weekend box office figures begin on a Wednesday. Wednesday.
But yeah,
Wednesday?
Okay, we talked about this the last time that you brought
this
up. Sorry,
I remain incredulous.
Which is why I don't care about the box office figures, because obviously, as you said, they open up on the Wednesday, but they call it weekend box office, so they kind of class. And that's how the industry works. But still, it's an amazing film. Go and see Thor Ragnarok if you haven't seen it already.
I second that.
Yeah, number two is Murder on the Orient Express. James, you have someone in High Low Joe that's in Murder on the Orient Express, don't you?
I do indeed. We have Tom Bateman, who is in Murder on the Orient Express, who was also in Snatched recently with Goldie Hawn.
Oh, okay.
And Amy Schumer. Yeah, he's a fantastic actor. Really, really good guy. We were very lucky to get him on High Low. I say lucky. I was having a meeting in the Curzon about High Low. Mm-hmm. He was there for another meeting. Hey, James, how you doing? What are you up to? Meeting for High Low. Cool. Oh, cool. Anything for me in there? Yeah,
oh,
yeah,
nice.
Yeah, sure. So I'll send you the script tonight. So that's how we got Tom.
That's how it works. Just basically go and hang out where you're. If you've got a movie, so all the aspiring film directors, filmmakers out there, this is what James is saying. James is saying basically go and stalk your favorite actors,
yep.
Find out where they hang out, pretend to hang out there for a meeting, and then just basically say, oh, you're here too? Oh, yeah, that's what I'm doing. Oh, I've got this picture. Yeah. And just hope that if they don't ask, just throw that in there. Just say, aren't you going to ask me, is there a part for you in this?
Well, I mean, the thing is, I can't do it now. He's huge now. And I think I got him a very lucky time.
But it's true. I mean, hey, at the end of the day, that gives you star power. It gives you movie star power, and gets you got a film distribution company that's picked it. I know that's not the reason why you picked it up, obviously. But you know, the as you said, James's character and personality was what won you over. But it helps as that package in
it
there.
It does, so. Of course. I mean, what's great is Tom's fantastic, but equally, you know, I mean, obviously he's one of the larger names along with Gethin Antony from Game of Thrones.
I was trying my best not to bring him up, but yeah,
that's fine. Me and Marcus both know Gethin. He's awesome. And again, he's one of my best pals, so this is how I cast stuff.
Yeah.
But equally, you know, the two leads in it also, Matthew Stathers and Lizzie Phillips, are fantastic actors, and mm-hmm. you know, everyone kind of holds their own with each other within their scenes.
Excellent. Excellent. And that's, I know we just completely sidetracked the number two, which is Murder on the Orient Express, but hey, who cares? That movie's doing well. It's number two. We're talking High Low Joe as well, so it's fine. And number one is Paddington 2. This movie, I want to go see it. I'm going to take my kids to go and see it, because
you have to see see Paddington 2. You have to see Paddington 1 and Paddington 2 in the same day.
Okay.
And you just have to take the day off work.
Yeah,
fair enough. And just maybe have a marmalade sandwich on the way home. And you just have to pay proper homage to Paddington.
But that's the thing. I don't like marmalade sandwiches. I like jam sandwiches. Can I take
if
a jam sandwich?
If you watch Paddington for long enough, you will like marmalade sandwiches.
So, but I don't like films.
I don't think that's how marmalade works.
Yeah, it's exactly. Yeah, films dictating what I should eat. The last time that a film did that to me was Once Upon a Time in Mexico, where I now eat puerco pibil, and don't get me wrong, pulled pork. I like it. It's all right. But then now I'm eating it. I order it every time I go to a Mexican restaurant. I don't want to start getting on the marmalade bandwagon just because of Paddington Bear.
And they never serve that in Mexican restaurants. There's no marmalade. Ever.
Well, so marmalade. Well,
you're struggle anyway.
Exactly, right? And how's that going to go with my pulled pork? Can I have pulled pork? Does it sound disgusting having pork in a marmalade sandwich?
Yeah. Absolutely not. Marmalade is something, one of the main things that you use to cover ham at Christmas,
shares in marmalade.
I didn't know that.
Hey guys, just so you know, marmalade's pretty cool. Everyone should get some.
Is that why you were saying they should be our shareholders? The reason I asked that is because I have very weird sandwiches. Well, what I get, to me, they're normal, but I get told they're weird. I have like a bread, banana, biscuit, chocolate biscuit, and then bread, and that's that usually I
that's
go with
not
the
Maryland.
The Maryland. That's awesome. That's good,
amazing.
Right?
Yeah.
There you go. Like the Maryland cookies. There you go. So that's what I was asking. If you can put pulled pork in a marmalade sandwich. If you can put pulled pork in a marmalade sandwich, I might have that. Then go and watch Paddington Bear.
I really hope this is a segment that you keep every week now. marmalade. What is it going?
Yeah, different brands. And it's like, yeah. If there are any brands out there of marmalade and want to sponsor the show, feel free to give us a call. You're listening to Shoot the Breeze on Resonance 104.4 FM. I am Marcus Iacco.
And I'm Laura Sampson.
With us in the studio, we have James Kermack, the director of Hi-Lo Joe, and Nick Sadler, the CMO of Film Label, who's promoting Hi-Lo Joe, which is coming out November 24th. Unfortunately, you can't buy the tickets for the View Cinema Piccadilly.
Yeah,
correct?
The premiere sold out, but we still got tickets for the other 7 screenings.
Yes. So, where are the screenings that are available?
We got Fulham Broadway. We got in London. We got Brighton, Hull, Cardiff, Liverpool, Leeds, and Oxford.
So what dates do you have for those ones?
I do not have them right in my eyes. Okay. But what we can do is we'll put them on your Facebook page and stuff like that.
Perfect.
Or they can check out Hi-Lo Joe Facebook page.
Oh, which is at Hi-Lo Joe _movie, correct?
That's correct.
Yeah.
And also on Twitter.
Yep. Yeah, and that's the same on Twitter. We can put the dates on the Shoot the Breeze Facebook page, which is Shoot the Breeze on Resonance 104.4 FM, as well as our Twitter page. We'll shoot that out as well. It's STB_Resonance FM. I have to make sure I said STB, not STD, which someone corrected me the other day. It's not STD. It's STB_Resonance FM.
This has really gone downhill really quickly. Marmalade and STDs.
Hey, that's how we roll. So our next segment is, I guess we're moving into our big segment, right? With our top five film movie discussion. That's our next segment. Here's the scenario. You are a time-traveling thief. You've been hired by an enigmatic billionaire to time travel and steal 5 debut movies, 5 of the best debut movies in the history of films. So you get in your time machine, you travel across the centuries from 1920s right through to 2017, and you pick 5 movies on a list. But then you see these 5 movies and you think, no, there's no way that you're going to give these 5 movies away. I mean, you now hold these movies that no one else is going to see except you. So what you do is you take the 5 movies that you've just stolen and you find the dark recesses of time and you sit there and you just keep watching these 5 movies over and over and over again. All of these are just basically our way of introducing our top 5 movie, film and TV discussion, which today is going to be the debut, uh, the top five favorite debuts of directors. So I've got my five. Laura, you've got your five. James, you've got your five.
I have.
Nick, unfortunately, we didn't ask you to get a five. But
Nick can share mine. It's fine. Do you like wanna, it. I imagine Nick one. Will also I've like what
one.
I've got.
You've got one. Okay, yeah. you've got one. I wonder what it's going to be. Yeah, it's going to be. We'll wait. So James, being our guest, we'll get you to tell us your number five and your number four.
Okay, so I did five to one, but this is like in order of, not my top five, but this is in order of time in that I watched it.
Okay.
So at five, I have Get Out, Jordan Peele, which is the most recent one that I've seen, which is just ridiculous. It's insanely good film.
Yeah.
I went to see it at the cinema where I got the last ticket on the day it came out, and I was packed into the cinema. I was right at the front, right in front of the screen. And it's one of the only screens I've ever seen where people were shouting at the screen, talking to each other. What's going on? No, don't do that! It's an amazing film. And we've watched it. I mean, my girlfriend's here, by the way. So not me and Nick. Me and Nick haven't watched it together.
It's fine. No one's judging. It's fine.
But I got Lucy to watch it as well, but I've seen it like four times this year already.
Oh, that's more than I have. I've seen it twice, and I would happily go see that again. So I'll go see that with you and your girlfriend and Nick if you want. So that'd be good. Yeah,
sure, why not?
Yeah, you know, Get Out is an amazing film. We'll talk more about that in a few minutes. What's your number four?
Number four I had is Tyrannosaur, Paddy Considine.
Oh yeah,
which I saw at the cinema when it first came out, and literally I think I was over in I think it was in post for Hilo, and sat outside the cinema for a good hour and a half in silence, just shut the film down. What am I doing? That's insanely good.
End everything and just walk away. It's like, no, it's done.
It's just superb. I mean, Mullen and Coleman and Marsan are three of the greatest actors we have working at the moment. And Paddy Considine's an amazing writer director. I mean, had the good fortune to go see his second film, Journeyman, at a private screening, which is. I mean, it was embarrassing because I'm a huge Paddy Considine fan, and my mate was doing Ferryman with him at the time.
Okay,
and so at the end he was like, "Hey, you know, James, this is Paddy." The film, I was in tears already.
Yep.
So I was like, "Hey, Paddy Considine, huge fan of your work." I was like in tears, and I was like, "Damn it, man, why did you introduce me then? This is ridiculous."
You could have carried on going, "Sorry, I have knuckle dust here with me."
You should be there. but yeah, if you haven't seen Tyrannosaur, it's one of the greatest films of all time, bar none.
I know, I've heard a lot. That's actually on my list to watch. I was supposed to watch it this weekend, but I was binge watching something else, which is going to be one of my recommendations later on. So that's Tyrannosaur number four, and Get Out is number five.
Yes.
Laura, what is your number five and what is your number four?
Well, my number five is The Babadook.
Yes.
Directed by Jennifer Kent.
Babadook.
And it's really, really scary. I quite like haunted house movies. I'm a particular fan of the Changeling films, a couple of different remakes of those. And this was, it just had all the elements that I love in a horror scare movie.
Yeah.
There was kind of a creeping fear that started to infect me. There was a well told that difficult relationship between some of the main characters, and that kind of deepened the horror of it for me. That's my number five.
Babadook's very good. Very good call.
And my number four is a Korean film that I actually only saw a few weeks ago as part of London's Korean Film Festival, called People in the Slum by Bae Chang-ho. I saw it at the Close-Up Film Centre in a special screening, and it was the director, who is one of Korea's most famous film directors, not that we'd know it here.
You still haven't given me the list of Korean films that you're going to see. You haven't given me that list yet.
Ah, yes. Something to post on the to-do list.
Right.
But it's kind of a love triangle movie, really beautifully shot in a shantytown just outside Seoul. And it's really moving. I don't want to give too much away, but there's a son who doesn't know who his father is, and his... it's so difficult.
Should we just give the spoiler alert?
Does Bruce Willis die at the end?
Yeah.
No one
dies, and in the end, people don't have to accept as bad a fate as they thought they would have to. So it's a really happy ending. And
you've ruined it for me. I can't go watch it now. Well, you should have said spoiler before you did it.
And it's just, I think it's really... that it's really beautifully shot, and it was something new and strange for me to see.
So what was the title for that? So people
it's
can go watch it?
It's called People in the Slum.
People in the Slum.
And it was directed by a Korean director called Bae Chang-ho. Came out in 1982. It wasn't actually allowed to be shown outside of Korea for a very long time because it depicted poverty in Korea, which the regime at the time didn't approve of. But now, happily, things aren't quite so strict.
Okay, so that's Babadook, number 5, and People in the Slum, number 4. Oh, that's those are your choices. Babadook, I respect. People in Islam, I've never heard of, so I'll put that on the list. I need to watch that. My number 5 from 1984, the Coen Brothers, Blood Simple. This movie, I love the Coen Brothers. The movie is about a bar owner. He owns a bar who finds out his wife is having an affair with one of the bartenders. He had hired a private investigator to find him out. He gets presented with proof, and when they want to leave him, or when his wife wants to leave him, he hires the private investigator to go and kill the wife and the boyfriend. And it's supposed to be a simple plan, and it goes to hell. Pretty much that's the plot for almost every Coen Brothers movie. But Coen Brothers, they're one of my favorite directors. That movie starts off, I love that movie because of how gritty it is. But another reason why I put that on the list is mainly how they made the movie. There's this legend going around about, and this, James, you probably know this story already. Yeah. They made the movie by basically shooting a trailer for a movie that they hadn't made yet, and they went around showing it to different people, saying, look, this is a movie we've made, do you want to invest in it, and so on. And people were investing in a movie they thought had already been made. They took all that money and just basically shot the extra scenes and just filled that
movie. Other 88 minutes.
Exactly, right? So that alone is one of the reasons why I put that as my number 5. That is the Coen Brothers, Blood Simple. My number 4, you've already mentioned it, is Get Out, is Jordan Peele, 2017. Daniel Kaluuya, Alison Williams, Bradley Whitford. It's about a black man played by Daniel Kaluuya, called Chris Washington, who is taken by his white girlfriend to her ultra liberal parents' house or home for the weekend to enjoy some celebration. And it plays with racial tension and racial expectation and stereotypes so beautifully. I was having a conversation with someone earlier today about a particular scene where I mentioned to the person that because they were white, they may not necessarily understand the how it resonates with some of the people who are black who are watching it. For example, a police officer shows up at a particular scene where in a normal film it would be, you know, celebration. But for this particular character, because he's black, it's a complete opposite. And that's why this movie is so fantastic, which is why when you mentioned it as your number 5, you said number 5.
5 in order of time coming out, sure. Not in order of how good the film is.
Absolutely. And it's Jordan Peele's first one. Jordan Peele from Key & Peele.
Which is awesome if you haven't watched that. Key & Peele is hilarious and also really on the money with social stuff.
Exactly.
Within their comedy.
So that's my number 4. So my number 5 was Blood Simple. Number 4 was Get Out. You're listening to Shoot the Breeze on Resonance 104.4 FM. I am Marcus E. Acko.
And I'm Laura Sampson.
With us in the studio, the director of High Low Joe, James Kermack, and the distributor of High Low Joe, Nick Sadler. We are talking top 5 favorite debuts by directors. Just before we go to James for your number 3 and your number 2, Miguel Ortega mentioned Boys in the Hood, John mm-hmm. Singleton.
I remember watching that. Yep. I really remember watching that.
And brilliant this film. Is Spinal Tap.
Yeah, they were Final Tap and Boys in the Hood were in my top 20 when I was doing this list down from like 80 to 5.
Yeah, that's the thing. You get a whole list, and one of the reasons why, because I looked at my list and I started off by putting a lot of my favorite directors on there, and then started crossing a lot of them off because I was thinking, yeah, I liked their work afterwards, but their first films weren't that great. Mm. But my top 5 for me anyway, and the ones that you've been mentioning, I saw your list earlier, both your lists, I really like the people on there and the work itself. Some of them I need to catch up on. Tyrannosaur, People in Slums, need to catch up on them. James, what is your number 3 and what's your number 2?
Number 3 was Away From Her, which is a film by Sarah Polley.
Yes.
It's an amazing film about a woman played by Julie Christie who gets Alzheimer's, and she's been living with her husband for many, many years, and basically she starts to forget who he is. So it's basically a film where this couple kind of fall apart, but one of them has to watch the other one completely forgetting who they are. It's a ridiculously good film, really heartbreaking. Sarah Polley is a huge talent. And I mean, this was a few years back, maybe 6-7 years ago she did this. She's only done one film since, which is Take This Waltz, which is again a great film, Michelle Williams, Seth Rogen, I think it was.
And Sarah Silverman, right?
Yes, yeah. But that's been, you know, it's another 3-4 years since she hasn't got to make another film. I think she's been working on a documentary. But, I mean, this woman should be writing and directing films every year. She's unbelievable.
Yeah, she's an actress as well.
She's so an actress. Yeah. She was you might recognise her from Zack Snyder's Dawn of the Dead, which is his debut. And my number two was... House Party, Reginald Hudlin, which is an amazing film. I remember watching it as a kid, and you know, I grew up on a council estate, but you know, I'm a white boy.
You're white?
I'm white. If you don't know on this radio show, I am white. But House Party is an unbelievable film, and you know, watching it, I was always just kind of like, that's the party I want to go to when I'm old enough. That's the party.
Kid and Play, Martin Lawrence.
Yeah, I'm still trying, but you know, it is what it is. But I remember having my big baggy pants and trying to do the kick dance, and you know, no one wanted to do it with me, but that's fine.
Oh,
no worries, we can do it at the end of the show.
That's cool, absolutely, man. Hey, I do that every wedding I go to. Yeah, I have a number of people. So number three was Away from her.
Number two, Hudlin, who's got he's just got a Marshall coming out with Chadwick Boseman.
Oh, yeah,
which looks fantastic.
That's cool. That's one on my list to watch as well. Okay, Laura, what's your number three? What's your number two?
Well, my number three is Whitnell and I. Bruce Robinson's first directorial debut, although he'd done lots of stuff before. If anyone in the world hasn't watched it, it's about two out-of-work actors, one posh, one slightly less posh, who have adventures in their house, in their local area, and on holiday. By mistake, in a country house, where there's a slightly predatory uncle who really enjoys the company, shall we say.
I think that movie is required watching for any university student, any boy going to university. Because that was basically all I heard when I was at university. Have you watched Wooden Light? Wooden Light? Wooden Light? I was like, okay, I watched it. I was like, it's just two guys getting drunk. But yeah, it's a good film.
It's not just two guys getting drunk. No, I think...
No, I know. But yeah, but it's just with the hype. It's like, yeah.
Yeah,
I mean, it's some of the best dialogue that's ever been.
Absolutely,
I mean, Bruce Robinson is an amazing, amazing writer. He's quite stunning, actually. If you read any of his novels as well, he's a huge talent.
And Richard E. Grant, right? Just is as Whitnell. That was Richard E. Grant.
Richard E. Grant and Paul McGann.
Yeah,
and Richard Griffiths.
Yes. Yeah.
God rest his soul.
So that was your number three. What's your number two?
My number two is Beasts of the Southern Wild, directed by Ben Zeitlin in 2012. It stars a six-year-old whose name in the film is Hush Puppy, and whose name in real life I still can't quite pronounce. Quavon Janae Wallace. Who was the most brilliant child actress I've ever seen. But she, in the film, lives with her father, who becomes ill. And when he becomes ill, things start happening in the environment. The water levels in the Louisiana Bayou where they live rise, and ice shelves melt, and these mythological creatures called aurochs are released from the ice. And so there's just a really kind of a dreamy, powerful sort of incantatory atmosphere to the whole film, which I just got completely sucked into. And that's why it's my number two. What did you think of it?
I love that movie. That movie's so beautiful.
The soundtrack's amazing as well, isn't it?
Soundtrack's amazing to write to. It's fantastic.
Another thing that struck me with it was Quavon Janae Wallace. That was her first film, and she's that young. She was nominated for an Oscar at the same time that I can't remember which actress. She was the oldest actress for a French movie. It was in the same year that the youngest actress and the oldest actress got nominated for an Oscar at the same time. But her performance was so powerful.
She was something like 4 years old when she got cast, or something like that.
Something along those lines. And again, I know bringing another movie, kind of measuring it up, Beasts of No Nation with Abraham Atta. It kind of reminded me of how those two actors just so powerful. Pretty much blowing away everyone else on the screen. That's one thing I took away from that movie. I would have expected her to do a lot more. I know she wanted to do Annie after that, but then haven't seen her in anything else. I know she voiced something in Trolls, but that's about it so far. But I guess it's maybe her parents are just trying to keep her safe from the industry to introduce her, you know, slowly. But I want to see more from her because she was terrific in that particular in that movie. Those are great picks. Whitnail and I and Beasts of the Southern...
Whitnail and I and Beasts of the Beasts Southern Wild.
Yeah, not Beasts of No Nation. That is Abraham Mata, but still great movie. My number three is from 2004, Edgar Wright, Shaun of the Dead. I raved about this on our Halloween episode. It basically rejuvenated, for me anyway, the zombie movies. Even though it was a comedy, it was still, it wasn't scary, but it was funny. Simon Pegg, Nick Frost, great witty script. Almost sublime editing. Love the way Edgar Wright with that film and all these other films after that moves with editing, where he moving from one scene to the next. It's part of the story. It's not a simple case of exterior shot, you see a car driving. It's nothing like that. It's part of the fun of the story, which is why I like Shaun of the Dead. It's such a good movie. If you haven't seen it, go see it. It's about zombies pretty much attacking a layabout in London, and him and his housemate have to pretty much get his ex-girlfriend from her house to the pub. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know who hasn't seen that movie. I don't like people that don't like that movie. I know that's exaggeration, but yeah, I know some people that don't like that movie. I'm still trying to convince them, but anyway. But that's my number three, Shaun of the Dead. My number two, 1941, John Huston, The Maltese Falcon. Love this movie. I grew up on Dashiell Hammett novels. Sam Spade is, for me, one of the best private detectives. It's Humphrey Bogart. The story is about this... private detective whose partner gets killed, and he's basically investigating that death, as well as a gorgeous lady who comes in to hire him to find out who's trying to kill her. And he gets entangled in these three different criminals who are chasing this elusive artifact called the Maltese Falcon. And it's an amazing film. I know it's old, it's black and white. There are a lot of people who shy away from black and white movies. Don't go and watch them. Some of them are the best you've seen. So you're listening to Shoot the Breeze on Resonance 104.4 FM. We are talking our favorite directorial debuts. Let's talk about our number ones.
I would jump in Jack Flash, Whoopi Goldberg, directed by Penny Marshall, which in the 80s is huge because it was a female director and a female lead. It was one of the first films I ever saw, and then Penny Marshall went on to do Big for her next film.
Yeah.
So if you're going to do a debut feature, which is Jumpin' Jack Flash, one of the greatest comedies of all time, and then go on to Big, I think you're an awesome, awesome director.
And Whoopi Goldberg is, she moved from there, went and started doing, she did Color Purple, did a whole bunch of other...
She's an amazing actress. She should be doing major, major films.
She's one of the few EGOT holders, right? So she's got an Oscar, Grammy, Emmy, and Tony. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that's good. Okay. Nick, I know we've been going around and around and we haven't talked to you in a while. Do you want to give us one of your favorite debuts from a director?
Pie by Darren Aronofsky.
I thought you were going to go High Low Joe. Why not? It's like, this is
what am I paying
parody.
For?
I know, right?
No, well, there would be two, but yeah. I randomly saw that film as a student, and it was on like a late night. I was in New Zealand, and I think it was on Sky or something. I had no idea and was completely blown away. Mm-hmm. And then I remember just like looking up like, who's this guy? And then following his career and you know, he's a legend.
Nah, so that's a good call. Pie. Laura, what's your number one?
My number one is Perfect Blue, directed by Satoshi Kon. It is a anime film, and the first, actually the first ever film that Satoshi Kon directed, which is unusual for things that actually make it into a English subtitle movie. He did lots of things after that, but this is about a pop singer turned actress who gets a stalker, and lots of weird, sometimes supernatural things happen.
Yeah,
after that,
I heard about that pretty recently, and I want to get that on my list as well to watch it. My number one, 2005, Joss Whedon, Serenity. If you've listened to this show for how many episodes we've had, you've heard me talk about Serenity, talk about Firefly. The opening sample for this is Firefly. It's a clip from Firefly. I love this movie. Joss Whedon is one of my favorite writer-directors ever. So that movie, Serenity, I've watched it almost 100 times. Go and watch it if you haven't seen it. Well, we've got 30 seconds left on the show. Enough time for our segment for Netflix and Amazon. James, you said you had one for Netflix and one for Amazon?
Yeah, I'd say watch Mindhunter on Netflix. It's amazing.
This for me,
and
Mindhunter.
If you haven't seen it, watch Banshee on Amazon.
Oh, is Banshee on Amazon
Banshee
now?
Is on Amazon, and it's the greatest show of all time.
Awesome. Laura, what do you want to recommend?
I want to recommend all the Bond films that just came on Amazon Prime.
Okay. For me, Netflix, it is Big Mouth. You're listening to Shoot the Breeze on Resonance 104.4 FM. James, Nick, thank you very much for joining us.
No problem.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening.
And see you next week.